Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with musical director Sinai Tabak. 25-year-old Sinai, Wunderkind musical director, is currently musical directing the opening musical for the Oslo Repertory Theatre Company's season, and that is Guys and Dolls. 2 years ago, Sinai musical directed a piece put together by director Gordon Greenfield, made up entirely of songs by Frank Lesser. And many of those songs came from Luck Be a Lady. Last year, Sinai was commandeered to musical direct a brand new musical, Josephine, when the then musical director had to step out because of an emergency. In the last 4 years, Sinai has musical directed 4 major musicals. This is a remarkable accomplishment for anyone, but especially someone who is just out of university. So, Sinai has a fascinating story. Hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. I know that some people think, well, how could I be anything but what I really am? But as a psychotherapist, it's clear to me that many of us are out there demonstrating a person who is either only a small amount of who we are, or maybe even a lot of who we are, but not the entire person that we are. So many people run into obstacles in their childhood that cause them to want to pretend that something about them isn't true. So many of us hear from families of origin, from teachers, from peers, from religious organizations or cultural organizations that something about us is not okay. Something that we look like, sound like, act like, want. And because we are so flexible, many of us try and pretend that we're not this thing. We don't laugh like that. We don't sound like that. We don't dress like that. We don't look like that. We don't stand up for ourselves. We don't get angry. We don't ask for what we want. There are so many ways in which people can be made to feel that they are not all right, or that something about them brings a consequence they really don't want. And so we begin by pretending this thing isn't true of us. And we get so good at it that we grow up having forgotten that we have this ability, that we have this talent, that we have this interest, that we have this way of being. And so too many of us are walking around with not enough access to who we really are. And that's a really uncomfortable way to live your life. So the Lynn Show is about saying that if this happened to you, if something about your childhood caused you to sacrifice some part of yourself, it may not be too late to recover it. And for the show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And today's interview with Sinai is a perfect example. When you listen to Sinai, you can hear that he is completely in touch with who he is, what he needs, what he wants. And as a result, he is living a life that is completely right for him. So without further ado, here now is Sinai Tabak.
Okay, so I'm here with Sinai Tabak. And I'm interviewing Sinai because he is the musical director for the upcoming production of Guys and Dolls, first production of the season at the Oslo.
That's right.
And he was also the musical director of Josephine last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also the musical director of...
Luck Be a Lady. That was my first show down here.
Yeah, Luck Be a Lady, yet another lesser...
That's right.
Production, right?
That's right.
So you're really familiar with
Yeah,
his...
I guess for me, Frank Lesser and the Oslo sort of go hand in hand.
Apparently, apparently. Well, boy, you could do a lot worse.
It's true. It's been great. A lot of the music that we did in Luck Be a Lady is obviously from Guys and Dolls, and it's been great to come back to it and see it in its original source material. Luck Be a Lady was a great first project that I did here, and it was so wonderful to get familiar with Frank Lesser's work, but I'm glad that I sort of get to do a lot of this music in its original form. It's very
exciting. Yeah. Did you know Guys and Dolls before this?
You know, I obviously knew Guys and Dolls. I knew a lot of the songs. I'd never seen a full production of it. I believe I had seen the first act of my high school production, like before I even got to high school, so I really don't remember very much. But no, I had never seen a full production of Guys and Dolls. And actually, a lot of us in the cast had never seen it.
I'm looking at you and I'm thinking how young you are.
Right.
And it hasn't been done very much.
No, I mean, it is sort of that classic American musical that everybody knows, but certainly in the sort of recent past few years.
Decades.
It hasn't been done much, yeah.
Right. It's my favorite musical.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've actually been getting that a lot from people, too. Like, oh, I love Guys and Dolls. And it's fun to work on something that has been successful for like 70 years almost at this point.
Did you ever see the movie?
No.
Oh, you should see the movie. Do you know who's in the movie?
I know who's in the movie, and I know about the movie. We sort of studied it a little bit for Luck Be a Lady, but I actually try and avoid other productions while I'm working on a show. I don't like to get other people's interpretations in my head.
I don't blame you, but after...
But after, I will definitely...
It's worth seeing Marlon Brando.
I know.
I mean, really.
I was surprised when I just had always assumed for some reason that Frank Sinatra played Sky Masterson because... You know, he has all the songs, including Luck Be a Lady. And I thought it was interesting that they sort of flipped it, that Frank Sinatra was doing Nathan, who really only sings that one song.
Yes, yes. And that one song, Adelaide.
Sue Me with Adelaide.
No.
Oh, you mean Adelaide song.
Yeah, it's not. No. There's a song in the movie that's not in the show.
Oh, my God. I don't even know it.
Well, unless I'm wrong, it's Adelaide, Adelaide, ever-loving Adelaide is no. taking a chance on me.
That is definitely not in the show. No. That's in the movie?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. I guess they wrote Frank Sinatra a tune.
I guess they did, right.
They didn't want him not to sing. Oh, that's funny. No, shows you how much I know about the movie.
Well, but there it is. You'll love it afterwards.
Yeah, afterwards.
Yeah, sure. Right. Okay, so... I interview people who make their living or their life within art.
Mm-hmm.
And it is clear, it seems to me, that the art to which you are giving your life and making your living is the art of music.
Yeah.
Yeah? Good. Yeah. Okay.
Music and theater.
Yes. Or theater music.
That's right.
Right. Good.
Yeah, I started out...
Well, wait a second.
Yeah,
No, you're answering my question.
Okay.
Well, you are and you're not. I only ask one question.
Sure.
And it is, can you remember... And if you can you tell me?
Yeah.
The very first moment in your life when music spoke to you, when you were drawn to it, when you thought, ooh, this is fun or nice or something?
That is an interesting question. I mean, I would have been too young to remember the exact moment because I've always loved music.
Are there stories about...
Well, my grandmother is a piano teacher, and she bought my parents a piano... for one of their wedding anniversaries, and I must have been about, 5 or 6 years old, and they just said, oh, you should take piano lessons, we have a piano now. And, being a typical 6, 7-year-old, I was like, if I have to. But I remember when I had just started playing, there was this piece, I think it was called Fire Dance, I couldn't even tell you the composer. I could probably play it for you. And it was one of those things where I practiced it, and I was like, oh, I like this. And then I practiced until I got it right. And that was sort of the first moment that I remember really enjoying the art of music. I never thought I would become a professional musician.
Well, hold on. I really want
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, you are. And I really want the progress of it. So sure. You're 6 or 7 or 8.
Yeah, I was 7 when I started taking... official piano lessons.
Right. And this song speaks to you and draws out of you this commitment to doing the work.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, mm-hmm. Good. So you continue to take piano lessons?
I continue to take piano lessons. I took piano lessons I took them right until I got to college. We were in Israel until I was 10. And so when I was 10, we moved to the United States, and then I switched piano teachers. And I had great piano teachers growing up. But I studied just normal classical music on piano. And theater didn't really come into the picture until I started doing theater in high school, but as a cast member.
Okay, so back up.
Uh-huh.
Did you go to the theater at all? Did your family go to the theater?
No, I mean, we weren't sort of a big theater family. My parents didn't listen to show tunes. My dad was a big Elton John fan, and my mom was a big Billy Joel fan.
Oh, my God.
And so between the two of them, I sort of got the two piano men. I think one of the first times that I played something on the piano that wasn't, Bach or Mozart... was when I played Tiny Dancer by Elton John. I was like, I can do other things on piano rather than just classical music. But I was very involved in all my school music programs.
That's the next question I
have. Yeah, sure.
Right, so this is elementary school, middle school,
I do remember in elementary, you're going way back.
I usually start
the story like,
Yeah, no, I want the beginning.
You want the beginning. What I do remember when I was in elementary school, I was in the choir. I loved singing, and...
Stop.
Uh-huh.
How did you know you loved singing?
I honestly couldn't even tell you. All I remember is that I was in the choir at a very young,
So did you have to audition for that, or show up?
Yeah.
Right.
And, I think it was one of those things where the only times we sang was, like, for school ceremonies and assemblies and things like that. And I just remember that I had a solo one year. I honestly can't remember anything. I just remember I had a solo. And, so it was sort of a given for me. Also, I had already been playing piano, but it was really two separate things. I was playing the piano, but also was in the choir. And And yeah, and when we moved to the United States...
Wait, I want to hear this about the solo. So you remember doing the solo?
I don't remember doing it. I just remember that I had one.
So what I'm hearing is, and this could be wrong, you know, that the solo singing had a similar impact that the fire dance thing had. That it was somehow, I don't know, pleasant, attractive, intriguing.
Yeah, I suppose it was. Again, I'm not sure that... at the time, any of this ever occurred
to me. But you remember it.
But I remember it. Right. You're right.
And you don't remember a lot. So these things that stand out, you know?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I remember sort of the early piano days of learning and getting better. And I hate practicing. You can ask my mom. I never practiced. I was terrible at it. But, and this is kind of ironic, I love improving at something. And so while I couldn't get myself to sort of sit down at the piano for 2 hours, I loved getting something right and sort of the art of getting something to be where I want it to be.
So it sounds to me like it didn't sound like practicing to you. It was something else. It was making something happen.
Yeah.
It wasn't like playing Hanon or whatever,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah. And my piano teacher gave me, you know, all those Hanon exercises. I could never do them.
Right.
I could never do them. And... you know, really for me, and this is true to this day, all of the practice that I got was just from experience and from playing. But I wasn't one to do scales for hours.
No, but it's what you said, that once you had fallen in love with this, whatever it was, you wanted it to be perfect, and you didn't mind the work that went into making it perfect. I'm making this up, is that correct?
No, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's definitely right.
Okay, all right. So you're singing in choir.
Uh-huh.
And you're taking piano lessons.
Uh-huh.
Are you playing in school at all?
No, the piano didn't appear in school until I was around 11 or 12.
And then what happened?
So when we moved to the United States, we moved to a small town outside of Boston. We had a sort of great public school music program. And I right away joined the chorus. And I also joined the band, but not as a piano player because there's no piano in band. So I took up the flute. My dad was a flautist, and when we lived in Israel, he had a flute store. So
he had a flute store?
He did. He sold and repaired flutes. he was the flute guy in Israel.
Yeah.
He ran a store called Flute House, and everybody that played the flute in Israel knew my dad. So I sort of grew up around flutes and music in general, and I used to go with him to the store and watch him repair flutes. So when it came time to pick an instrument for band, I knew I couldn't do piano, and flute was sort of the obvious choice. So I took up the flute. And so in middle school, I would play the flute in band, and I sang in the choir. But again, the piano was just sort of something I did at home. I took piano lessons. I think a lot of people probably didn't even know I played the piano. And the first time that I played the piano at school would have been when the choir teacher asked me to play the piano for the choir. She must have found out that I played, or I said something, and I said, oh... sure, I mean, I know how to play the piano. I could probably figure out how to play the piano for a choir. And I got the sheet music, and I was, you know, very different from, again, playing classical music. And I said, oh, this is kind of fun, you know, doing something different. And so that was sort of, I always trace that as the first time that I learned to use the piano for something other than just solo classical piano. That's sort of the day that I became an accompanist.
Yes.
And that opened a whole world of what I could do with the piano that I hadn't thought of before. And you know, from that day, I was playing for pretty much like every choir in the school system. Obviously more as I got older, because I was a little young at that point. But
And loving it.
And loving it. I loved playing piano for choirs, and it sort of became that I would spend more time doing that than working on my own sort of solo material.
Wait a minute, solo material meaning the...
like the stuff I was doing in my piano lessons.
Right, the serious stuff.
The serious stuff, yeah. Which I still loved, but and my piano teacher was amazing. Her name was Maya Gurevich, and she was very supportive of all the stuff that I did outside. I think she just loved seeing me play the piano and enjoying it.
Yeah.
But with her, I still worked only on sort of the serious classical music.
Right.
And it was very important for me to keep working on that, even though at the time it was sort of like a chore.
Yes.
But but it was very important to my musical growth and you know, just my development.
Okay. All right. So about how old are you when this is going
on? So I would say
on?
The first time I started playing for choirs, I would have been probably 11 or 12. The first choir I was in was the fifth grade chorus, which that was my first year in the United States in fifth grade. So I was in the fifth grade chorus, and I'm pretty sure by the time I was in sixth grade, I was playing the piano for the fifth grade chorus.
just a question that just occurred to me.
Yeah.
Did you speak English?
I learned how to.
So you didn't speak English when you moved here?
I had very limited sort of yes, no, cat, dog, how are you, very basic vocabulary. And yeah, I would say it took me about a year to sort of settle in and be comfortable with it. But
did the choir help? I mean, singing, or that didn't?
I don't know if that ever occurred to me.
You were probably singing in English.
I was, yeah. But you know, by the time I was singing in the choir, I'm sure I knew enough English.
So you got it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was 10, and that's a great age to move to a new country because you're young enough for your brain to be able to quickly pick up on a new language. But I was also old enough to kind of understand what's going on.
Yes.
I have a younger brother. He's 7. He's not. He was 7 when we moved.
Right.
He was 7 when we moved, and you know, he lost his Hebrew a lot quicker than I did.
Yeah.
And then I have a sister who's 9 years younger, so she was only a year old when we moved.
Yeah.
And she just never even knew Hebrew.
Yeah. But you have both.
But I have both, yeah. You know, at this point, English is much more comfortable for me, but I'm perfectly fluent in both. So I started playing for the fifth grade chorus, then I sort of started playing for more choirs. But again, sort of that's all I was doing with the piano in school was just playing for the choirs.
Okay, so you said, you said, and I did, you know, I never thought of making this as a career. So were you thinking of doing something else? Did you have some idea of what you might be doing?
You know, I was very good in school. I was good at science and math. And I was one of those kids that just didn't, when people asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I said I wanted to, like, be a dad and have a family. That was my answer.
Really?
Yeah. I wanted to be a meteorologist and a pilot. I was really all over the place. I still kind of am. I am interested in all sorts of things.
How old are you?
Right now?
Yeah.
I'm 25. I had to think about it.
I know.
91. Yeah, I'm 25.
Right. So there's plenty of time. You could do other things still.
Oh, totally. And
absolutely.
And I wouldn't be surprised if I will one day. But I certainly love what I'm doing right now.
Well, okay, so we still have you in, like, I don't know, middle school, high school?
Yeah, I'm still in middle school
at this
point.
And you're playing for everything that you can play.
I'm playing for the choirs, but this is sort of where theater came into the picture for the first time. Also around the time that I started playing for choirs, and I was, you know, just in the shows. The first show I did was the Mikado. As an actor, yeah.
And a singer, yeah.
In the Mikado, I was bodyguard number 2. And then my next show in middle school, we did Fiddler on the Roof, and I was a model, Model the Tailor.
Moving up.
And then my last show in middle school was Cinderella, and I was the king. I was the king. So, but again, piano was not even a factor in that
at all. No.
I was just in the shows,
and
I loved
it. And you're having a way, right? You loved it.
I loved it,
right.
And that, you know, that's when I made a lot of friends that were in theater, and when we got to high school, the high school theater program was a very tight knit family, and we spent a lot of time there. We would do 2 shows a year, a play and a musical, and that sort of became my family throughout high school. Now, I kept doing all the music program stuff. I was still in chorus and in band on the flute, and but just doing the shows as an actor.
Were you thinking you might be an actor?
No, I don't. I think
were just having a good time.
I was just having a good time, and I loved it. Definitely never thought I would be an actor. And again, at this time, being a professional musician is not something that had really occurred to me. I knew that I was very good at it and that I loved it, but, you know, I didn't want to be a musician. I thought it was going to be sort of a tough life, and I knew that I could probably do something else if I set my mind to it, so it didn't really cross my mind. So here I am in high school doing all the shows, and my first show in high school was Beauty and the Beast. I was LeFou. had a blast. That was just like the most fun I've ever had, was playing LeFou in Beauty and the Beast. And the following year, we did Aida. And, you know, I grew up loving Elton John because of my dad, and I was like, oh my God, Elton John wrote a musical and we're doing it. It was sort of like, it was neat. And while we were working on Aida, there was one day that our music director, and I didn't really know what a music director was.
Right.
He was our choir teacher, actually, and he was just taught us the music for the shows. And there was one day that he couldn't be there, and he knew that I played the piano because I was playing for the choirs. And he asked if I could play for the rehearsal. And that, I was like, oh, sure, you know, Elton John, Aida, and how different can it be, you know, playing for a choir? And I was hooked. That's where it started. I remember I played a few rehearsals for our high school production of Aida, and it was so funny because I was in it. Yeah. I had a part. I was right. Merib. And so I would sort of go up and do my scene and then run off to the piano and play the piano for the next scene. And there was one day, we were in tech week, and the band was already there, and I was sort of jealous that I wasn't playing in the band. That was sort of the first sign. I love being on stage, but our keyboard player was like an hour late to one of the rehearsals. So I jumped down in the pit and I played the piano, and oh my God, I had so much fun. So that's where it started. That's when I got bit by the bug, the theater bug, and playing the piano for theater. And after that, there was a local community theater, Enter Stage Left Theater. I owe everything to them, and to Kelly Grill, who is the woman that runs that theater to this day. Kelly Grill's daughter was in high school with me, Emily, and we dated for a while. We were best friends. I was very close with that family, and she knew I played the piano, and she said, oh, you know, maybe you could come play the piano for some of the stuff at our theater. And I said, oh, sure, great. And so that's sort of where I started my music directing career, was at the local community theater. First show I ever music directed was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Wow.
And that would have been like right before my junior year of high school, right after Aida, basically.
Okay, so as a junior in high school, you musical direct your first show.
Yeah, as a junior, and it wasn't a high school show; it was the
community theater show, right?
Uh-huh. I was about to be a junior in high school. I was not even 16 yet.
Oh my God.
And yeah, I music directed Your Good Man, Charlie Brown, and I put the orchestra together.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about what it means to musical direct.
Great. Well, I sort of found that out as I went on that show.
Just a question.
Please.
Did she say to you, Kelly, did she say, would you musical direct? Or did she say, would you play the piano?
Yeah, right? I don't know if the word music director was ever in there. And we did have somebody who was there to teach the singers. So I was playing the piano for it and playing in the orchestra and putting the orchestra together. And later on, it's, you know, as I did more and more shows there, I was officially the music director. But no, I really think it started out as, you play the piano, right? Maybe can you play for us? And I was there at auditions. I played the piano for the auditions and for all the rehearsals and in the show. So what it means to be a music director.
Yeah.
We're going on a separate thing here.
Yeah.
Basically, anything, I'm in charge of anything that relates to the music in the show. Sort of working chronologically, on the first day of rehearsal, I'm there to teach the music to the cast. Whether that's working with the solos, you know, on individual songs, which usually involves, you know, they don't really need to be taught the music, but I work with them on the interpretation of the song and the music and... Not literally just you have to sing this note, but what does this note mean? Why are we doing this? And turning the song into a full
performance,
full thing. Yeah.
Do you teach them the harmonies, if there are?
If there are harmonies, yeah. That's usually if I'm working on with the ensemble on the bigger group numbers, I'll teach the harmonies.
Yes, because in this you've got fugue for tin horns. That's not a simple thing.
Sit down, you're rocking the boat.
Sit down, you're rocking the boat. Mm-hmm, right, exactly.
There's a few big group numbers, and yeah. So on those, I have the whole cast, and I assign them the different vocal parts, you know, in a show like Guys and Dolls, it's all written out for me. Few things that you sometimes have to adjust, but all the arrangements are pretty much done.
Right.
So I'll teach the cast the music.
That's another question. You don't need an orchestrator then on a show like this.
No, this show came with orchestrations.
Right.
We're not doing the full orchestration because we can't fit.
You haven't got all the
interest.
Right.
So I do have to make some adjustments here and there to sort of reduce it for our particular.
Right.
But no, this show comes with orchestrations. On a show like Josephine, my job was very different because it's a new musical, and so we had Steve-O, who was doing the orchestrations and the arrangements, and I worked very closely with him to make sure that what I was playing in rehearsal is what was going to end up in the orchestra. But, you know, my job as a music director on a new musical is very different from something like Guys and Dolls.
Well, so much more stuff to do.
Yeah, there's a lot more stuff to do. And oftentimes, on a new musical, I'm doing new arrangements.
Well, actually, that brings up a question about Luckily a Lady.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to do orchestrations?
We did, and we had my really good friend, the amazing Neil Douglas Riley, who did the arrangements and the orchestrations. I helped with some arrangements, but the orchestrations were all his.
So even though these songs come out of an established, I mean, some of them came out of Guys and Dolls,
mm-hmm.
you didn't use the Guys and Dolls orchestrations,
no,
right?
No, because we wanted to sort of tailor them to our show.
To the piece, right.
That's right.
Okay. Okay, so you teach the cast the
I teach the cast
song.
The music.
Right.
I work with the leads on their interpretation of the song and performing them.
Now that's an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
The director... Is that something you share with the director?
Right? It's very important that we're on the same page.
Yeah.
You know, the director will have a vision for the character in the show, and it's my job to sort of make the music support that vision.
So I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. So would you have conversations with the director in front where he says to you, and now when she's singing, you know, a person could develop a cold, you know, I want her to have this kind of attitude or
uh-huh.
something, you would have that kind of conversation.
Sure.
Right? And then you would have that in your head when you're working with the singer.
That's right.
Right.
That's
right.
Right. And you know, a lot of it is just knowing Josh is wonderful, and he and I have been on the same page from day one, which is great. That's not always the case.
No.
But, you know, theater is a collaborative art form, and so if I work with a singer on a song and we coach it and we make it, you know, right for me and right for the singer, and then we put it in front of the director and it's not what he wants, then we compromise.
We do something else.
We make adjustments,
right,
And that happens all the time, and that's why we love collaborating.
Yes.
Because you get lots of different takes. So that's my job for the first few weeks, is working with the cast and also, you know, playing for rehearsals. Oftentimes I'll have a rehearsal pianist, this time we have Judy. But I love playing.
So you don't mind being the rehearsal
pianist? No, I since that day I was playing for the Aida rehearsal, that's I love playing the piano. That's what got me into this mess.
Yes.
I love playing the piano. And so I'll often play for rehearsals, and but then once I have that first orchestra rehearsal, I have to put on a new hat, and then I work with the orchestra as their conductor, so making sure that what we're playing matches what we've been doing in rehearsal. A lot of times, especially with this, these orchestrations are quite old. We have to, sometimes things aren't clear in them, we have to clarify everything, and it's a lot of work with the orchestra. You know, we had an 8-hour rehearsal on Monday.
Do you need a copyist?
You need a copyist if you're doing a new musical that requires you to print new music.
Right, but not if you want to make adjustments to the existing music.
If I have to make adjustments, I'm sort of being the
copyist.
On a large scale, that's not reasonable.
No, definitely.
It's too much work.
Right.
It's too much work. But, you know, in here, I wrote a completely new arrangement for the opening number that I had to orchestrate. That's sort of the big one. And other than that, it's been sort of a few things here and there, but nothing made. I didn't do the whole show.
Yeah, fixes.
Fixes and adjustments. So, once I'm with the orchestra, that's what I'm doing. I'm working with the musicians, and oftentimes, you know, my orchestra rehearsal was on my day off from the cast rehearsals this week. So I just have to wear those two hats for a while. And my favorite day is that Sitzprobe, where we get the singers and the orchestra in the same room for the first time, and we sing through the show with the orchestra, which to me, that's like, you know, that's my favorite day of the year, and I'm lucky because I get a few of those a year.
Yeah. I'm sure that is also the favorite day for the singers and the
musicians.
You know,
everybody loves the Sitzprobe because it's
so exciting.
It just brings the music to life.
That's right. And, all the stuff you've been working on, and you hear what it's really supposed to sound like. Oh,
yeah,
it's wonderful.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. it's pretty great. So that's coming up this Sunday.
I am.
Which I'm very excited for. And once we get into tech, we have the orchestra with us for part of the time, and that's when we're in the theater and working through it. And at that point, my two worlds come together. The cast and the orchestra are in the same place, and in a way, it's sort of a good metaphor for how I came into this profession as both a musician and a theater person.
Yes.
And as the music director, I am the musician in the theater rehearsal and the theater person in the music rehearsal.
Yes.
And I sort of have to bridge that gap, and I love it.
Of course, you know what it feels like for both of them.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm sort of literally standing between the orchestra and the cast as the conductor.
Yes.
Right in between.
That's right.
It works out.
Yeah. Okay, so let's back up now.
Please.
So you work exclusive, well, that's not the word I want. You work all the time or many times or a lot with this community theater, with the community theater, Kelly.
In high school,
high school, right.
And I worked there all throughout high school, and I would go back there for the first few summers. When I was in college, I'd go back.
So at some point, did you say, music, this is what I'm going to do?
Would say that Charlie Brown thing was probably the first sign, but I was still pretty convinced at that point that I'm not going to be a musician. But I guess, you know, right around my senior year in high school, when it came time to applying to college, I was sort of sitting there and thinking, well, I don't want to stop music directing, so I might as well just keep going. And that's what led to that decision.
That is so amazing. I mean, it's not. I have to do this. I want to do this. It's that I'm not ready to let go of it yet. Right?
Yeah. I sort of saw. You know, I think when I was younger and I said I didn't want to be a musician, I didn't want to be just a pianist or I wanted. That wasn't enough for me. And I think theater made me see that there was so much that I could do with music that wasn't just practicing the piano every day. And as I was getting the hang of it and getting better at it, I started seeing that as something that I not only could make a career out of, but get fulfillment out of it.
I was just going to say, well, actually, you didn't say it, that you were also quite good at it.
Yeah.
That it was easy.
It was easy, and it was... You know, imagine being 16 and finding out that there's this job called a music director that you'd never even heard of, even though you know so much about music and theater. And so, you know, imagine sort of figuring that out and then saying, oh, I like that. I could do that. And you know, I got better at it. And the better I got, the more fun I had with it.
Of course.
And then I sort of got to college and realized that I was only at the tip of the iceberg.
Well, that's of course the question. What did you major in? Where did you go?
I ended up going to New York University, and I was a music composition major. I didn't think I wanted to be a composer. I still sort of had it in my mind that music directing is what I wanted to do. But there are no music directing programs. It's not, you can't get a degree in music directing or musical direction.
Wow.
Now there are a few programs. They're mostly graduate programs. You can get a master's in it. But for me, it was either study piano performance, which I didn't want to do, or music composition, which I knew would give me sort of great skill set for being a music director. And I was interested in composing. I wrote some songs in high school. So I studied music composition at NYU. My composition teacher was a man named Joe Church, who just happened to be a Broadway music director. And my composition lessons very quickly turned into sort of music directing lessons. Joe was the original music director on Lion King on Broadway. And he was working on In the Heights at the time as the associate, and he was just such a valuable person for me to meet.
Talk about synchronicity.
Well, you know, I think I mean, it was a lot of luck, but I had my meeting with the advisor sort of my first day freshman year in college, and I told him I wanted to music direct, and he said, oh, we have a teacher, I think you'll be the right fit.
Yeah.
And thank God for that, because I ended up studying with Joe for all 4 years of college, and composition, but also he helped me so much with music directing. And the best way to learn was just to do it. And one of the reasons that I wanted to go to NYU is they have one of the, you know, biggest and most active theater programs in the country, the Tisch School of the Arts. And even though I was over at the music school, which was Steinhardt, I spent most of my time in college at the theater school just playing and music directing for anything that I could. I mean, anytime someone needed a music director, I just said yes. And I got so much experience. I worked with so many different people, and you know, I music directed some crazy shows that I'd never even heard of, and you know, even though my degree was in composition, my education was all those hours that I spent working at the theater school.
So, okay, so you get out of school at what, 21?
Yeah, I graduated a little bit early, so I was 21 when I graduated. I did it in sort of 3.5 years.
Okay, so you're 25 now.
I'm 25
It's
now,
not very much time between 21 and 25.
No, it's not, and it's flown by.
Really? Well, so how did you wind up? I mean, what did you do?
While I was still in college, professional music directing gigs were sort of rare for someone my age.
No kidding.
And so a lot of how I started making a living was just accompanying, mm-hmm. sort of going back to my playing for the choir days, which were not that long ago. And I played for a lot of the voice lessons at NYU. And that's sort of how I made a living, and I started playing for some classes. And I was doing that while I was still in college, so I sort of got a great head start. And by the time I graduated, I had, you know, I'd made enough connections to sort of, I was the music assistant on some readings of new musicals, and sort of my first gig, I was the assistant music director for a show called Johnny Baseball, which was actually about the Red Sox, and I'm a huge Red Sox fan, so that worked out nicely. And it was actually my first, I believe I had just finished my freshman year in college, and they were just looking for a music assistant. They were doing a production of it in Boston. So I was like,
of course,
great, I grew
right,
up there.
Right, right.
So I went, that's how I spent my summer. I was the music assistant on this Johnny Baseball, and the music director was Wendy Cavett, who was the music director for Mamma Mia on Broadway at the time. So she was a great person to know, and a few years after that, they did a production of Johnny Baseball at Williamstown Theater Festival, and they hired me, and this time I was playing the piano for it. So, and that I believe that would have been sort of my first job out of college, and then so that was that, and then my next big project, I music directed Les Mis at the Dallas Theater Center.
Wow.
That's
a very big jump.
There was a big, big jump, and the reason I got that Les Mis job was the director of Johnny Baseball at Williamstown, Gordon Greenberg, who was also the director for Luck Be a Lady.
Right.
Johnny Baseball was my first time working with Gordon. And
and it was the tipping point in your career.
Right. He said, oh, you're pretty good. Yeah. And he brought me over to the Dallas Theater Center to work on a reading of a musical that he was writing called Single Girl's Guide. And that's how the Dallas people sort of got to know me. And a few months later, they were looking for a music director for Les Mis. And their music director had to drop out. And they said, oh, how about this kid we worked with? You know, it was sort of last minute. And
right.
But, you know, when you're... When
it's
you're
like Josephine.
Right. Oh, yeah. It was less last minute than Josephine. We'll get to Josephine in a minute. They just called me. So I'll become music director
right,
and visit the
right.
Dallas Theater Center. And that was a pretty amazing experience to get to do that. And that would have been... Yeah, I guess about a year after I graduated college.
Amazing.
And then the following year, I came down here to do Luck Be a Lady.
And because and Gordon brought you.
Because Gordon, that's right.
Right, and that was the beginning of your relationship with this.
With the Oslo, yeah.
Right. Where do you live?
I live in New York. I'm in New York most of the time. So when I'm not music director, and you know, I, those are sort of the big music directing jobs I've had. I'm always doing three or four different things at the same time in New York, whether I'm playing the piano for something or music directing. Or, there's always something happening. That's why we're in New York.
Yes, but, I mean, really, so it's Les Mis,
mm-hmm.
and Luck Be a Lady, and Josephine,
mm-hmm.
and Guys and Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
This is four huge things in about the space of those years.
Yeah,
right?
About one a year. In addition to, you know, some things that I did in the city and a lot of assistant music directing jobs. Those are the big ones. It's hard, you know, everything sort of blends into each other. I'm so young and it's already hard for me to sort of remember the order in which things happen. It's a domino effect, you know. The Gordon Greenberg story is a great example of that. That, you know, I was just sort of an assistant on that production, and he heard me play the piano, thought I did a good job, and asked me to do that and then that, and everything sort of, because, you know, as a music director, I don't get to audition for a job the way that an actor does.
No, somebody has to know you and ask.
Someone has to know me and ask, and my audition is my work.
That's right.
Is my work.
That somebody hears you doing something else.
That's right.
That was the Josephine story.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they called me to do Josephine because I did Luck Be a Lady. And
because the musical director...
Right, Don had... He had a last-minute family emergency. And he had to leave, and they were already in rehearsals.
Michael said, there's this kid.
Well, I still have the voicemail on my phone from Michael Edwards. Hi, darling. I just wanted to know what you're up to the next couple of months. And so, yeah, I called him back. I said, I'm pretty busy. Why? And, you know.
I remember him telling Ken, yeah. Well, we know this kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was here the next day.
Yeah. It was amazing. I usually ask this question of people who are... Well, I usually interview people who are considerably older than you, you know. And I ask this question. And mm-hmm. the question is, having given your life to this work,
mm-hmm.
what would you say about it? What would you say it's like or it's meant to you or pretty much anything that occurs to you about what it feels like to give your life to the work of music? Or actually, in your case, more to the point, to the work of theater music.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, I'm too young to have given my life.
Well,
to
you
music,
have given you have,
but
actually.
I've given it so far.
Well, I mean, really, what were you, six?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No,
so even
true.
Though you didn't know, you were in fact.
But you know, I guess I've never really thought of it that way. It's more so that music has given me a life for the last, you know, 10 years or whatnot. Not that I didn't have a life, but if it wasn't for music, I probably would have been doing something boring right now. not to say that other things are boring, but it just opened my eyes to this whole other world. And my girlfriend Brianne, who's also down here, she's the one of the stage management apprentices. I met her through theater, and you know, we have a great life, and I live in New York. It has never felt to me like I've had to give up anything to do music. I'm lucky, you know. I get to wake up in the morning and go to work and play the piano.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I don't sometimes too many negatives, but of course I sometimes take it for granted. Because it's hard when you do it every day to not take it for granted. But there are, you know, there are those days where I'll sort of think, wow, you know, I had a rough day at work, but I was still just playing the piano.
Uh-huh.
So I'm very lucky. And one of my favorite things about this lifestyle, too, is that I'm pretty restless. And so the shows usually last 3 months at
just
most.
Just long
and
enough.
And then I get to do something new. And that goes not just for the show, but also the people. You know, I get to work with people very intimately and very intensely for a sort of a short amount of time. And then we sort of go our separate ways, which is always sad. But then I get to meet new people. And from each show and each person that I work with, I learn something new. And I feel like it has given me wisdom beyond my years to work with all these different people, many of them significantly older than me and significantly more experienced. I love being the young person in the room. I've sort of been that way since I'm the oldest son. I'm the oldest grandson in my generation. So I'm used to being the oldest, but because I was the oldest, I was always sort of the kid with the grown-ups.
Yes. And in that case, you were the youngest.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Exactly. I was always sort of, I always hung around with the generation above me.
Still.
And yeah.
Actually, that's a lovely way to put it, because truly, that is what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, look, most of our cast is about my age. They're very young. And Josh and Lee are some of the youngest people that I've worked with. But it's true that for the most part, I'm working with people that have been on Broadway or have just been in this, who have given 30 years of their lives
right.
to this, not the last five, like me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so grateful to learn from people like that and to be in all these different places. I mean, I get to work in Sarasota and in Dallas and in the Berkshires and in New York. And that's a great way to sort of spend my 20s, you know. I love it. I get to travel the country and meet amazing people, and I'm lucky that Brianne is also in theater, and we get to work together too. And so, you know, when people ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I never said musician, but it's turning out just fine. And if I end up being, you know, an astronomer in 10 years, then that's fine too.
Yeah, my sense of you is that you don't need to know where you're going, because when you see it, you know it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in a way, it's like that Firebird dance. Did I get that right?
I think it was called Fire Dance or Fire Song.
Okay.
I can literally play it for you.
Oh, go right ahead. Israeli.
I don't think it was an Israeli piece.
But it sounds it, doesn't
sound it?
It?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, but
so, but again, that's a perfect example. You're not even up the piano fair, I don't know. And then you found this and you said, oh, yeah, okay,
yeah.
This, right. So my guess is that's what life will always be like for you.
Probably. And, you know, I'm fine with that. I've always said, you know, it's tough being a musician. After Guys and Dolls, I don't know what I'm doing. I know that I'm going to be doing something, because there's always something. I enjoy the uncertainty. I enjoy the adventure. I think life is an adventure, and I'd rather sort of have a lifestyle that mirrors that. But at some point, I have to also account for the things that I wanted to do with my life. And again,
dad and children
dad
and all
and children,
that stuff,
you
right,
know, of
right.
course, 25.
Right.
But eventually, that's
yes.
that's something that I'm going to want to think about, and we'll see how music factors into it. But sort of the same thing that happened to me in high school is like, I don't want to stop, so I'm not going to.
No.
And if one day I want to, I will. I think that I'm capable of that. But there's no reason for me to sort of plan or to think about it, and I just sort of keep riding the wave, and it's liberating too. To work in a job that I have full say over my schedule and my choices. If I don't want to take a job, I don't take it. That's my decision. I am my own employer. You know, my dad always had his own business, the flute store, and he has a business now. And I think I sort of grew up watching someone run his own business, and I want to do the same. And being a musician, especially a freelancer, I am running a small business.
That's right.
Also,
that's a lot. There's a lot of the oldest child stuff in that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in control.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of the oldest child stuff, I think, in everything.
That you do.
Yeah, you know, in a way.
Yeah, you're used to being in charge.
Yeah, there's a great home video. And I suppose I answered the question incorrectly earlier in the interview about the first time that I music directed. It was me and my little brother. I was 8, he was 5, and we were singing a song together. And he wasn't singing it right. And so I'm like, you know, singing it right louder. So then, and he starts crying, I don't know this song. Buzz, that would have been the first time that I music directed.
That's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Sinai.
Of course, my pleasure. Thank you.
I don't want to stop, so I'm not going to. And if one day I want to, then I will. I'll do something else. I know I'm capable of that. This is the statement of somebody who believes completely that he can be the person he is from moment to moment. From the moment that he didn't feel like playing to the moment that he did feel like playing. From the moment that playing was okay to the moment that accompanying was terrific. From the moment that accompanying was terrific to the moment that musical direction, oh yeah, that's where I want to be. This is a man who believes that he has the right to be who he is and that it's all right for him to follow the flow of himself, the flow of what feels right to him. So you're listening to this and thinking, that is not who I am. And maybe there's a way in which you are not able to follow your own flow. And if you want to talk to me about that, then you go up on my website, thelinshow.com. Click on the email tab, ask me any questions, and I will respond. So as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten